Hello and welcome back to another episode of Green Sox. In today's episode, I will discuss the Bruins lost in Game 5 against the Islanders to go down 3-2 in that series. The Red Sox won against the Marlins but lost against the Astros as they begin a three-game series against the Astros. And then even some more Boston Celtics rumors. Who would have thought? You know, the Celtics season ended last week and there's been a bunch of rumors every single day. And I will discuss those. And for the first time in a little bit, there's actually like zero Patriots talk going around. So no Patriots talk this episode. So I'm sorry if you're a Patriots fan listening to this podcast. But anyways, I'm going to begin this podcast with the Boston Bruins, who, as I mentioned, they did lose Game 5 to the Islanders. And a whole bunch of stuff happened afterwards. Bruce Cassidy went on a tangent, basically saying the refs are treating the Islanders like saints. And I didn't watch the game, okay? I want to put that out there first because, again, I was working. I wasn't physically able to watch the game. But I have seen from a lot of places that the officiating was terrible. It was one of the worst games of all time, whatever. But then there's some Islander fans saying that Bruins fans are just crying and they're just upset. So I'm not sure what to believe. It could just be the Islander fans being, well, they lost, so they're going to cry about it. But it seemed like a lot of people were genuinely serious when they're saying the refs were screwing over the Bruins, like where they were calling calls for the Islanders, but not calling them for the Bruins. So I'm not sure what to make of that, but Bruce Cassidy did say some comments about it, and he was fined $25,000 yesterday from the league for publicly criticizing the officials. But as for the game, the Islanders won 5-4. Tuukka Rask was not good at all. He got pulled. They were saying with some injury, I mean, part of the reason was because of injury, but again, he just was not playing good whatsoever. He had, 12 saves on 16 save attempts, good enough for 75%. That is just horrible, especially for a playoff game. Then Jake Swayman came into the game. He had 2 saves on 3 save attempts. Tuukka Rask is starting tonight. Tuukka Rask is starting tonight because, like I said, they are mentioning that he has some injuries and stuff. And it was some people were assuming that he wasn't going to start tonight because he was pulled partially because of an injury. But he's going to be there. And the Bruins don't have the luxury of just like, oh, if we lose this game, we could play another one. Or, oh, if we go down 3-0 in the first period, we could pull him and we'll be fine. No. You lose, you go home. That's it. There's no other chance. There's nothing. I thought Bruins in 5 or 6, that's physically impossible now. I'm obviously rooting for Bruins in 7, but the defense needs to step up. Because, yes, it is easy to blame Tuukka Rask because it's the goalie and it's kind of like the quarterback. You got to blame the quarterback. You got to blame the head coach, whatever. And it's easy to blame the goalie, but the defense has been pretty horrible as well. And I'm not saying Tuukka Rask is perfect. He's not. But the defense has been pretty horrible. And a big part of it is injuries. And for Game 6, the injuries are still there. Curtis Lazar is out. Brandon Carlo's out. And Kevin Miller are out. So they don't get any help there. If Boston doesn't defend, if Tuukka doesn't have his A game, the Bruins are going home. Offense did all they could. Offense scored four goals. Brad Marchand scored. David Pastrnak had 2 goals. And Krejci scored. But that's all. I mean, that's not bad. If your team scored 4 goals and you lose, that's not okay. If they score 4 goals, you expect to win the game, especially in hockey. Like, you expect to win. But when your goalie is struggling, he's dealing with injuries, it's just not going to happen. And it's sad. It's really sad. I'm just frustrated. I think you could tell with the tone of my voice. I'm frustrated because I thought, and they still could. Don't get me wrong. The Bruins can still very well make a run to the Stanley Cup. But I thought they were just going to like storm their way through. Like, I thought this Bruins team was really, really good. But I don't know. Again, is there still pretty decent chance that the Bruins do win the next 2 games and move on to the next round. And the winner will face the Lightning in the next round. So I guess I was right all along. They will face the Lightning if they move on. But there's not much more I could say, really. There really isn't. You got to win. You got to win. You can't have Tuukka Rask give up 3 goals in the first or 4 goals in the first 2 periods and then just go, oh, Swayman, just keep it close. Like, you need, maybe 3 total is fine. 2 would be awesome. 1 would be ideal. And 0 would be phenomenal. But, man, Tuukka has got to step up tonight. It's a huge game. I think he's a free agent at the end of the year. So who knows what the Bruins are going to do with that. I'm not going to talk about that now. I'll probably talk about it in the offseason. But it's interesting. it's really interesting because I'm not ready for this Bruins season to end. I thought they were going to make a deep run, and it'd be so heart-wrenching if they just their season ended like that. And this podcast would be just pure Red Sox talk and occasional Celtics rumors, Bruins rumors, whatever. It's just going to be pretty dull, you know? And unless, like, you know, the Bruins win the Stanley Cup, then this podcast is going to be popping, some celebratory stuff, you know? But yeah, huge game tonight, game six in New York. It's a 4:30. The game starts at 4:30 and it's 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific. Whew, let's go Bruins. That's all I got to say. Let's go Bruins. It's going to be interesting to see what happens on the ice because there's been some verbal jabs between the coaches, the players, some quote-unquote dirty hits from the Bruins that they've been fined for. And then Bruins were saying, oh, they were cross-checking all game and that's why I did it. It's just like a whole bunch of beef. It's going to be interesting. I'm very interested to see what the refs call, what happens tonight. I don't know. I'm very, very interested. So go Bruins. Go Bruins. So next up, we have the Boston Red Sox, who they faced the Marlins on Monday, which was a makeup for the postponement from a couple weeks ago. They won 5-3. It was Nick Pivetta versus Thompson. I forgot his first name, who was making his MLB debut for the Miami Marlins. It was Zach Thompson. There we go. Nick Pivetta wasn't really great. He went 4 2/3, giving up 7 hits, 2 earned runs, walking 3 and striking out 6. It was like a decent, solid outing, like nothing crazy. The bullpen was great. Garrett Whitlock went 1/3, giving up no earned runs. Darwinson Hernandez went 2/3 of an inning, giving up a hit, no earned runs, striking out 2. Hirokazu Sawamura is winning over a lot of Boston fans' hearts. He's been playing phenomenal baseball recently. He went 1 1/3, giving up no hits, no earned runs, 1 walk, and striking out 2. And it was after one game in Texas, I remember, where Alex Cora was like pretty upset that Hirokazu Sawamura kept on like leaving his splitter over the plate. And that's why he kept on giving up so many home runs. And recently his splitter has been nasty. He's leaving it under the plate. Nope. Like, it's really hard for the hitters to hit it. And it's not a coincidence. It is not a coincidence. That's why he's being way more successful recently. And he's been a reliever that one of the best Boston relievers recently, and that's what you want to see. Just a really rough year, and I mean, you could blame it on transitioning to the MLB, trying to find like what it works best in the MLB. Like I said, his splitter, he finally found where to put it, and now it's working. But really, really good to see Sawamura pitch really well. Josh Taylor pitched decent, went 2/3 of an inning, giving up a hit, no one runs, walking 1 and striking out 1. And then Adam Ottavino came on for the save. He went 1 1/3, giving up 3 hits, 1 earned run. And striking out to not the sharpest outing, but he earned his third save of the season. Offensively, Boston had 10 hits. The first one was scored in the bottom of the first on a wild pitch by Zach Thompson, which made Xander Bogart score. And in the bottom of the third, Alex Verdugo had an RBI double to make it 2-0 Boston. And in the bottom of the fourth, Christian Arroyo had a 2 RBI single to make it 4-1 Boston. And then in the bottom of the fourth as well, Verdugo had an RBI single to make it 5-1, and ultimately the Red Sox won 5-3. Christian Arroyo went 2-for-3 with 2 RBIs and a walk and a double. Verdugo was 2-for-4 with a double and an RBI. Bogarts was 2-for-4. Devers was 1-for-4. Gonzalez was 1-for-4. Pulecki was 1-for-4 with a walk. Hernandez was 1-for-4 with a walk. And yeah, so that win made Boston go to their fifth straight win, and they were 37-23 after that win. And then yesterday, they started a 3-game series against the Astros for the second – well, last week it was a 4-game series, but they faced the Astros for the second time in a week, basically. And the Astros had their number yet again. Last week, Martin Perez pitched phenomenal against the Astros. Yesterday, he was terrible. By far his worst outing of the season. Martin Perez went 2 innings, giving up 6 earned runs, 6 hits, walking 3 and striking out 2. Just rough outing. Really, really rough outing. I'm not too worried. We know when we signed Martin Perez that he wasn't we weren't expecting Martin to have a 3.05 ERA, which I believe he had going into yesterday's start. Like, what does he have? 3.88 ERA for a 5 starter is not that bad, but hopefully this is a little rough patch. He's been one of the most consistent starters for the Red Sox all season, so hopefully this is just a little inconsistent outing. The Astros figured out what he was pitching last start that made him so successful, and they made changes, but that's why Martin struggled. Who knows? But, Matt Andrees went 3 innings in that bullpen. He actually pitched pretty well. Probably one of his best outings in a little bit. He went 3 innings, giving up 3 hits, 1 earned run, striking out 5. Really good stuff for Andrees. Brandon Workman went 2 innings, giving up 1 hit, no earned run, walking 1 and striking out 1. Good outing for him as well. And then to close things out, Phillips Valdez went two innings, gave up one hit, no one run, walking three, and striking out two. Offensively, relatively quiet. Framber Valdez made the Red Sox struggle for the second straight week, basically. He was very good. He went seven and the thirds, gave up five hits, one and run, and striking out eight. The bullpen was great, too. Paredes and Taylor pitched two scoreless innings. And the only runs scored by the Red Sox were on an RBI ground out from Hunter Renfro in the bottom of the fourth. Nothing really crazy for Boston. They were 0 for 9 with runners in scoring position. They left eight men on base. Nothing, just a rough offensive performance and a really rough pitching performance, and that's obviously a horrible key to win a baseball game. Bogaerts was 1 for 3 with the walk. Martinez made his return to the lineup. He was 1 for 4. Renfro was 0 for 4 with an RBI. Plawecki went 1 for 1, but then he had to leave the game after fouling a ball off his mask, so he had to leave the game, and Vasquez came in. He was 1 for 3. And Kike Hernandez, the lone bright spot in yesterday's game, was 2 for 4, who he's been struggling quite a bit recently. It's very good to see Kike play really well. So, yeah, pretty rough loss there for Boston. That loss makes them 37-24 on the season. They are 1.5 game behind the Rays for first place in the American League East, and they have a comfortable 5-game lead over the Yankees for second place. So, well ahead of there, and yeah, so not a lot of stuff to say, but despite that loss against the Astros being pretty ugly and not a lot of bright spots, there is a bright spot that came out of yesterday in total. Chris Sale talked to the media and he said he is 100% sure he will make his debut this season. I mean, not his debut. He will play this season. That's the right words. Which is humongous news for the Red Sox. He is saying he feels the best he's felt in a while. He says he's going to be the same pitcher that you always expect from him. He even said if they want him to be in the bullpen, he's willing to do that. Although the Red Sox have said they don't want him to be in the bullpen. They want him to be a starter, which if that happens, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with the rotation. Do they move someone at the deadline? Do they move someone to the bullpen? Like, what are they going to do right there? I don't know, but Chris Sale back, and the most obvious statement ever, is a humongous get for this Red Sox team. It would help them tremendously. If they're there, they're where they're at right now. If they're like in second place, a half game out, one game out, two games out, it's just if they make no moves at the trade deadline, Chris Sale coming back is probably going to be the biggest move of any team at the trade deadline. It's going to be a huge get for the Red Sox. If he's fully healthy, like he says he is, and he's super confident in that, it's going to be a humongous get for this Red Sox team. As for the timetable, they're speculating it'd probably be like a late July, early August kind of timetable, which is totally fine and almost correlates with what I said of the trade deadline, which is trade deadlines normally at the end of July. So I'm excited to see Chris Sale pitch. He hasn't pitched since 2019, believe it or not, due to Tommy John surgery, obviously. So I'm excited to see him back on the mound. Hopefully he has that dominant stuff that we saw in 2018, 2017. And if he does, again, this Red Sox team makes a huge leap. And I'm excited to see it. I'm really excited to have Chris Sale back. And it's really good to see him in good spirits, happy to be back on the field, happy to contribute to his team. He was throwing off the mound in Fenway a couple days ago. He's with the team. He's going to be with the team on upcoming road trips. I love it. Just some positivity with some pretty bad results yesterday for the Red Sox. Love to hear it from Chris Sale. And yeah, so that's really all I got for the Red Sox. And to finish this podcast, I got some Celtics talk. I do have some Celtics talk and quite a bit of it. So first things first, I'm going to talk about what was reported today from Bleacher Report. I don't remember who the reporter's name was, but a reporter from Bleacher Report tweeted or wrote a story that Kemba Walker and the Boston Celtics sources said the Celtics and Walker are likely to move forward from the relationship this offseason in a mutual agreement between the parties. Now, Twitter's having a field day with this. They're saying, oh, first Kyrie, then Hayward, then Thomas, then Walker. What's with the Celtics not having a good relationship with any superstar that they sign or trade for, whatever? Now, in that story, they were also discussing how Danny Ainge was a big part of that. They didn't like how they treated Isaiah Thomas. They didn't like how, like, when Anthony Davis's dad came out and said he doesn't want his son to play for the Celtics because of what they did to Isaiah Thomas. And people, Celtics fans, including yours truly, was just like, oh, that's just whatever. But people want to play for the Celtics, obviously. And inside the report, it was basically like, no. Like, Kemba Walker heard that Danny Ainge was trying to trade him for Drew Holiday last year. He did not like that, and that had a stain in their relationship. Again, this isn't a Shams. This isn't a Chris Haynes, a Woj, whatever. And I'm not going to discredit anyone's credibility, because if they're a reporter, they work their butts off to get to that part of their career. If they have sources, they have sources. But until one of those say that, I'm not really going to fully believe this. At the same time, I do think that Kemba Walker will get traded. I feel like, not because of sources or anything, I feel like just that matchup just didn't work. It really didn't. Kemba Walker, they've treated him with so much like bubble wrap. They made sure like don't play back-to-backs, like we're going to let you come back whenever you want, whatever. And whenever he had like the tiniest injury, they're like, no, we're not going to risk it. We're going to have you be ready for the playoffs. And then in the playoffs, he missed three of the five games in the playoffs, which that's not what you want to do. Like, you don't want to take care. And some of those games, it ruined your playoff seeding. It ruined a chance to play like a Milwaukee or play the Knicks or the Hawks in the first round, because you had to like rest Kemba on the back-to-back, and the Celtics did not play good in games that Kemba rested. And I can see where Stevens could be like, you know, this is a big contract. I'm not sure if I want to rely on Kemba's health. Recently, the past 2 years, it has not been ideal. We've given him, last year, we gave him everything we could, and he still wasn't healthy. At that point, do you just say, let's move on? It didn't work out. Kemba Walker's still a good player. I need to put this out there. Kemba Walker's not horrible. At the same time, he is not playing up to what his contract is, and that's a problem. Especially with the Celtics, who have a bit of a financial problem. They cannot afford a guy getting paid like, I think, like $35 million to play less than ideal all-star potential stats. Like, they need to put up 20 points, like not eight assists. He doesn't really do that. Like, six assists, a couple of rebounds, shooting like 45% from the field. That's even like, I don't know. It's just, I've been defending Kemba all year. At the deadline, people were like, oh, trade Kemba. And I'm like, no, they're not going to trade Kemba. And they weren't. There was no chance. And they didn't. But now, I think I said this a couple of podcasts ago, though, that I'm pretty sure the Celtics are trading Kemba Walker. I'm relatively certain that's going to happen. And if this report is true, that they both probably met and said, hey, like, I appreciate you guys, but I don't want to be here anymore. I don't know. But if it's what it's reported as, Kemba Walker has a problem with Danny Ainge, Danny Ainge is gone. Brad Stevens is there. So does Kemba Walker be like, you know what? Actually, like, I don't mind playing here. Or is it just like Brad Stevens is like, hey, I think I'm going to look around and shop you. If you want to go somewhere specific, we'll give it to you or whatever. I don't know. I don't know behind the scenes. I have zero sources. I don't know anything inside the scoop. But it's definitely interesting there. A trade idea that was floated around was the Mavericks, who, if you saw the Mavericks play in the postseason, that they kind of need another scorer. Same with the Knicks, who you saw Julius Randle struggle mightily, and they didn't really have anyone else. They had Derrick Rose, who they had to rely on, who he's probably to be a little bit expensive for them. Who knows what's going to happen with Derrick Rose. But if Derrick Rose were to leave, the Knicks are a pretty intriguing option for Kemba Walker, because if the Celtics are looking to trade Kemba Walker and get financial like flexibility in return, the Knicks have the cap space to absorb Kemba Walker. And they can give back like a prospect or two, like a Kevin Knox or whatever. And I'm not saying like Celtics fans are going to hear that and be like, what? I don't want that. But what it does is it gives the Celtics financial relief to like maybe give Smart an extension, maybe give Fournier an extension, who knows? But if there's one of two ways. The Celtics could do that, or they can go, hey, Dallas, I will give you Kemba Walker and maybe a first or so for Kristaps Porzingis. You don't want Porzingis anymore. We need to get rid of Kemba's contract. Now, I mentioned this last podcast with Porzingis. I get the fit. Like, Porzingis is 7'3". He hasn't been playing as good as he used to recently because of injuries, and I don't know. He just doesn't like his role. He's not really comfortable. And if he's not comfortable being the second man, I'm not sure if he's be comfortable being the third man in Boston. I don't want to deal with more drama off the court if I'm the Celtics. But if he were okay with it, if theoretically in a world where he's like, okay, we could be rolling out a lineup of like Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, maybe Porzingis and Robert Williams, that's a pretty nasty lineup. If Porzingis can play back to what he used to be and not what we saw in the playoffs and when he came back from injury this year. It seems like that's been rumored quite a bit. And I'm kind of wrapping my head around it. Like, am I okay with that? And I'm not sure. I'd have to see what else is in the deal. I don't think Mavericks would do that straight up because Walker's getting older and he also has some injury issues. And yes, Walker's contract's a little bit shorter, I think by a year shorter than Porzingis's. But at the same time, like, Dallas kind of needs Kemba more than they need Porzingis, one can argue. Because Walker can be a second option. He can be good if he is healthy. And he showed that this year. He had some really good performances for the Celtics. And Porzingis just doesn't really want to be there. He wants to be the main guy, which, again, why I'm very skeptical why Boston would trade for him or why he'd want to go to Boston because he wants to be the main guy. I'm not sure. Another trade idea floated around. I'm all over the place, by the way, because there's been so many Kemba Walker trade ideas, proposals, rumors, whatever. So I'm just trying to cover all of them in my mind going, oh, Porzingis. Oh, wait, no, this team. Oh, wait, no, this team. And like, it's just going all over the place. So I'm sorry for that. But another rumor I did see was someone reported a team to keep an eye on for. Oh, it's Evan Massey. I hope I pronounced that correctly. I think of Mass Live. He said, per source, another team to monitor in the Kemba Walker Celtics split is the Oklahoma City Thunder. OKC has the flexibility to take on a bad deal and gets compensated for it. Al Horford's contract could be used in this situation. So basically, if it were a Kemba for Al Horford, I'm not sure why Boston would have to throw in a pick. Yes, I can see why Boston wants Al Horford and they could use Al Horford, but Al Horford's contract's not pretty either. I don't think Boston should throw in like a decent, maybe a second round pick, but I don't think a first is necessary because Horford's getting up there in age. He's older than Kemba. And I'm not sure why Boston would need to throw in a first to convince OKC to take the deal. Like, I'm not sure. I think OKC could flip Kemba to another team for probably a late first or whatever. And I just, if Boston were to trade like Kemba in a first for Horford, I'd be pretty bummed. Like, I wouldn't be bummed that Horford's back. I'd be bummed that they're giving him a first just to get rid of Kemba Walker's deal to bring back another deal that isn't that pretty either. So if it were a Kemba for Horford straight up, maybe. I feel like some Celtics fans are overrating Horford quite a bit. He's not the player he was in Boston. Yes, you could say because of the fit in Philly. Yes, because he didn't really play that much in OKC. But he is getting older, and his contract is pretty big. And he's not going to be that amazing player he was in Boston. He could be serviceable, and he could be a lot better than, I don't know, like a Luke Kornet if you have, or if you want to roll a lineup of, let's just say, like Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Al Horford, and Robert Williams. That's a solid lineup. It is. But is that the best lineup that's going to beat the Brooklyns, the Philadelphias, the Milwaukees in the East? I'm not quite sure. Yes, Horford has guarded Giannis and Embiid really well for the Celtics in the past, and that could be a reason why Boston could pull the trigger. But against, like, Brooklyn, Horford could stand in front of Durant, but Durant could speed by him easily. Smart would guard. I know, if Jaylen Brown's back, it wouldn't be that bad. I don't know. I'm trying to convince myself with a lot of these Kemba Walker trade proposals, and something tells me that all these proposals we're hearing, the Porzingis's, the Horfords, it's going to be just like the exact opposite. They're going to be traded. He's going to be traded to, like, I don't know, some other team that no one really expected for some. Just my gut's telling me that he's not going to get traded for like a lot. I don't know. I feel like Boston might settle for financial flexibility, which might not be happy with some Celtics fans, but they kind of need that at the same time, the Celtics, because Tatum's extension's kicking in this year, which is quite a bit of money. Who else? I'm blanking on the name. Jaylen Brown's extension kicked in already. That's quite a bit of money as well. Like, the Celtics are going to be in some financial problems. Marcus Smart, they might not resign him because of financial. And if they want to get rid of Kemba's contract, I wouldn't be stunned if they just want to get rid of $34 million and take back maybe like $5 million in contract, if whoever may be, which is why the Knicks are such an intriguing option to me and something that the Knicks might do, because the free agent class is not that great. They could sign Kyle Lowry for most likely cheaper, and that might be what they want to look at first. But I'm guessing Lowry'd want to go to more of a win now kind of place. I get he's already won his championship, but my gut tells me he wants to go like, I'm not really sure what, maybe he wants to go to Dallas. Who knows? I don't know. I don't know Kyle Lowry's decisions because I'm not really a Raptors fan. I don't really think for Kyle Lowry, but yeah, I feel like Kemba has a lot of situations. To summarize everything that I just said in the past like 10 minutes, I think The Celtics will trade Kemba Walker. I don't think he'll play another game in the Celtics uniform. What it's going to be, my gut's telling me it's for probably financial flexibility, and the Celtics will probably, most likely the Celtics will have to give a pick to give get rid of that contract, maybe a second, potentially a very protected first. Yes, I do feel Kemba Walker's days are over. So a little bit of rambling there, just a big talk about content. Topic, that's the word I'm looking for the Celtics. So I kind of need to talk about it a little bit because, I mean, this kind of changes the direction of the team depending on what they do with the trade. So there's that. And to end this, I have a coaching rumor, surprise, surprise, for the Boston Celtics. Last night, actually, kind of was a surprise. The Celtics are reportedly interested in interviewing Mike D'Antoni, who is an assistant for the Nets right now, after the Nets are done with the playoffs. So why is that interesting? Because if the Celtics are trying to improve their defense, and that's what Stevens was preaching all year, our defense needs to be better, why would they hire a guy who has historically a pretty horrible defense? And if the Celtics fans thought, oh, wow, this all-threes offense sucks under Stevens, wait until you go an all-threes offense under D'Antoni. You thought Stevens was bad. D'Antoni's is worse. They just chuck up threes. And, I mean, Tatum and Brown and whoever may be smart will love that. But Celtics fans would not. So I don't want Mike D'Antoni on this team. Yes, he has made Western Conference Finals. He has proven that he could be successful. But like we saw with the Rockets, when they make their threes, yes, they can be really successful. But when they don't, it's a really hard watch. And they get, but like we all remember the Warriors-Rockets Game 7 back in 2018, where the Rockets went like 0 for 27 at one point from three. And I don't know. I'm not sure I want Mike D'Antoni. I would want him over like a Lloyd Pierce and Jason Kidd. I really just don't want Lloyd Pierce and Jason Kidd. Lloyd Pierce, I've actually talked myself a little bit into like, okay, maybe. But I'm still like, it's like a 5%. I'd be on board. 5%. Jason Kidd. 10%, maybe like 30 if it brings back Damian Lillard. If Lillard's like, hey, they hired Kidd, I want to go to Boston, then I'd be like, okay, Kidd was a great hire, you know. But yeah, soon one podcast I'm going to discuss like the pros and cons of trading Damian Lillard for like a Jaylen Brown. Like, is that like, there are pros and cons, and I will discuss that in another podcast. I'm not going to talk about it now because it's kind of a lot and it's kind of an interesting topic to talk about. But anyways, that's going to do it for me today. Yes, the Celtics might look to trade Kemba Walker, and people are reporting that their relationship is done, and Kemba Walker will not be a Celtic anymore, so it'll be very interesting to see what happens there. And the Celtics are looking at Mike D'Antoni. Just going to summarize all that Celtics talk I just had real quick. So thank you guys so much for your constant support. It truly means the world to me. I will probably have an episode for you guys out Friday, most likely Friday. But until then, have a good rest of your day. Go Bruins, and peace.